This podcast will cover the subject of the very remote age of ancient Egypt, a chapter from Mustafa Gadalla's book, Ancient Egyptian Culture Revealed, second edition. This subject consists of four topics.
Topic 1. The Rising Valley. Egypt is, and was, one of the most arid areas in the world. More than 90% of Egypt consists of desert area. Only about 5% of the vast country is inhabited, along the banks of the Nile and its branches. This fertile Nile Valley is a strip of 7 to 9 miles, 11 to 15 kilometres, wide. The Nile flows through Egypt from south to north. That's because the country slopes downhill towards the Mediterranean Sea. North of Cairo, the Nile splits into several tributaries that constitute the delta, a wide green fan of fertile countryside some 6,000 square miles, 15,500 square kilometres in area. The River Nile in Egypt received, and continues to receive, 90% of its water during a 100-day flood period every year, as noted by Herodotus in the Histories, 292, where he states, "The water begins to rise at the summer solstice, continues to do so for 100 days, and then falls again at the end of that period, so that it remains low throughout the winter until the summer solstice comes round again in the following year." The floodwaters of the Nile come as a result of the rainy season in Ethiopia, which erodes the silt of the Ethiopian highlands and carries it towards Egypt along the Blue Nile and other tributaries. No appreciable amount of water arrives to Egypt via the White Nile, which starts from Central Africa. No silt is carried by the White Nile, hence the name white means clear. The muddy, seasonal rushing water of the Blue Nile slows down as it reaches Aswan. As a result of the slowdown, the silt in the moving water settles to the bottom. This causes the bed of the river to gradually rise from time to time, and the level of the land, which always keeps pace with that of the river, increases in varying degrees according to the distance downstream and the variant topography of the land. This, in turn, causes the groundwater table to get higher as the water surface increases in elevation with the increase in the elevations of the Nile Valley and its surrounding lands. The elevation of the Nile Valley increases every year as a consequence of annual floods during the summertime. These little by little accumulations add up over the years. When the Nile waters arrive to Aswan, it begins its slow movement, which causes the deposition of silt. To control the floodwaters at Aswan, the old Aswan Dam was built centuries ago. Because of continuing siltation, it was frequently necessary to increase the height of the dam every few decades. At Esna, for example, the Nile, depositing its annual negligible quarter of an inch of silt, was able, over 2 millennia, to virtually bury the temple at Esna, with the modern town of Esna now sitting higher than the roof of the temple. This temple that we see here was built on top of earlier temples because of prior cumulative annual siltation deposits. Several other locations throughout Egypt show the impact of the siltation problem at several surviving temples, such as Edfu, Luxor, and Abydos. Much further inland and far away from the River Nile, we find another example at Abydos, where the very old massive structure called the Assyrian is located next to the New Kingdom Temple of Osiris, which was built by King Seti I, 1333 to 1304 BCE, and his successor Ramses II. This Assyrian structure is located much below the elevation of the New Kingdom's Temple of Osiris, and is partially submerged underneath the groundwater table. The Assyrian structure's foundation is cut many feet below the present level of the water table, which has risen some 20 feet, 7 metres, since New Kingdom times. It should be noted that many pharaohs have inscribed their names on buildings that they never built. Therefore, just because Seti I inscribed his name on some parts of the Assyrian building, this does not make him the builder of the Assyrian. The tremendous difference in elevation between the Osirian and Seti's temple, as well as the dramatic difference in style between the two, suggests to many scholars that the Assyrian is a much older building. Various photographs in support of the text of this subchapter are to be found in the digital edition of this book, as published in PDF and e-book formats. The evidence at the Assyrian is consistent with the evidence at Giza and elsewhere regarding the greater antiquity of Egyptian civilization. Topic 2. The point of beginning. Herodotus reported that he was informed by Egyptian priests that the sun had twice set where it now rose, and twice risen where it now set. The statement indicates that the ancient Egyptians counted their history for more than one zodiac cycle of 25,920 years. The zodiac cycle of 25,920 years comes as a result of the wobbly rotation of the Earth, which does not spin true upon its axis, but more like a slightly off-center spinning top. See explanations of the fundamentals of this phenomenon in chapter 11. This motion is called precession. As a consequence of the wobble of the Earth upon its axis, the vernal equinox each year rises against a gradually shifting background of the zodiac constellations. The precession of the equinoxes through the constellations gives names to the 12 zodiac ages. It takes roughly 2,160 years for the equinox to precess through a zodiac sign. Thus, it takes some 25,920 years for the spring equinox to traverse the full circuit of the constellations of the 12 zodiac signs. This complete cycle is called the great or full year. Therefore, Herodotus's statement about the sun setting and rising where it now rises and sets would mean that the Egyptians counted their history back for more than a complete zodiac cycle. The precessional cycles of the equinox were observed and recorded in ancient Egypt. See Astronomy in chapter 11. Our present zodiac cycle, great or full year, began with the age of Leo the Lion as follows. Age of Leo, 10,948 to 8788 BCE. Age of Cancer, 8787 to 6628 BCE. Age of Twins, 6627 to 4468 BCE. Age of Bull, 4467 to 2308 BCE. Age of Aries, 2307 to 148 BCE. Ancient Egyptian history extended to a complete zodiac cycle of 25,920 years, plus a partial zodiac cycle between 10,948 BCE and the end of the Age of Aries, when ancient Egypt lost its independence. Thus, the antiquity of ancient Egypt is 36,720 years old. We will reaffirm this antiquity by another set of calculations later on. That the ancient Egyptian civilization is over 36,000 years old, and by extension, that life on Earth is that old, goes against Christian and Western establishments. Both have predetermined that life on Earth is about 5,000 years old. As a result, it has been continuously repeated that the pharaoh Mena, circa 31st century BCE, is reputed to have unified Egypt and began ancient Egyptian civilization. This repeated arbitrary and unfounded assertion about the pharaoh Mena, Menes, being the beginning of ancient Egyptian history is contrary to the evidence. The Greek and Roman writers of antiquity, basing their accounts on information received either first or second-hand from Egyptian sources, claimed a far greater antiquity for the Egyptian civilization than what was arbitrarily established by the academicians. The chronology of the ancient Egyptian pharaohs since the time of Mena basically came from Manetho in the 3rd century BCE. Manetho's work has not survived. We have only the commentaries on it by Sextus Africanus, circa 221 CE, and Eusebius of Caesarea, circa 264 to 340 CE. According to Eusebius, Manetho ascribed great antiquity to pharaonic Egypt, with the age of ancient Egyptian antiquities of 36,000 years, which is consistent with the accounts of Herodotus. This is in general agreement with other accounts and evidential findings, such as Diodorus of Sicily, Diodorus 1:24, and the ancient Egyptian document known as the Turin Papyrus, an original Egyptian document dating from the 17th dynasty, circa 1400 BCE. The physical evidence also supports this remote antiquity of ancient Egypt, despite the fact that so much archaeological evidence from such remote times has been buried below the present groundwater levels due to the phenomenon of the rising Nile Valley. Evidence remains from many ancient Egyptian texts, temples, and tombs, which corroborates the accounts of the Greek and Roman writers. For example, many temples throughout Egypt make reference to being originally built much earlier than its dynastic history. The texts inscribed in the crypts of the temple of Het-Heru, Hathor, at Dendera, clearly state that the temple was restored during the Ptolemaic era, based on drawings dating back to King Pepi of the 6th dynasty, 2400 BCE. The drawings themselves are copies of documents that are thousands of years older, from the time of servants of Heru. The text reads, "The venerable foundation in Dendera was found in early writings, written on a leather roll in the time of the servants of Heru, the kings preceding Mena, Menes, at Men-Nefer, Memphis, in a casket at the time of the Lord of Two Lands, Pepi." Due to the rising elevation of Egyptian land, as explained earlier, several ancient Egyptian temples needed to be elevated, as confirmed by Herodotus and the physical evidence throughout Egypt. Even though a few ancient Egyptian temples were restored during the Greco-Roman period, they were all rebuilt according to ancient Egyptian plans, symbols, deities, figures, etc., that were found in numerous temples and tombs throughout the country long before the Greco-Roman era. Topic 3. The Age of Leo and the Sphinx. Our present zodiac cycle began with the Age of Leo, 10,948 to 8788 BCE, and is represented by the Great Sphinx of Giza, with its human head and the body of a lion. Both the historical and the physical evidence at the Sphinx's site indicates its remote age, despite the common but groundless notion that the Sphinx was built somewhere between 2520 and 2494 BCE, during the reign of Khafre, Chephren. Herodotus, who wrote about the pyramids of Giza and the builder pharaohs, including Khafre, in detail, never attributed the construction of the Sphinx to Khafre. Other writers of antiquity who wrote about the Sphinx never attributed it to any particular pharaoh. A powerful piece of physical evidence regarding the antiquity of the Great Sphinx is the ancient Egyptian stela, commonly known as the inventory stela, which was found in Giza in the 19th century. This stela describes events during the reign of Khufu, Cheops, 2551 to 2528 BCE, Khafre's predecessor, and indicates that Khufu ordered the building of a monument alongside the Sphinx. This means that the Sphinx was already there before the time of Khufu, and therefore could not have been built by his successor, Khafre, 2520 to 2494 BCE. Since the inventory stela contradicted the Western academicians' prior assertions regarding Khafre being the builder of the Sphinx, they dismissed the stela on the basis that its stylistic features appeared to be from the New Kingdom, 1550 to 1070 BCE. This is not a sufficient cause to dismiss it, since there are numerous stela and texts from the Old Kingdom, 2575 to 2150 BCE, that were later copied in the New Kingdom, and no one dismissed their authenticity. People everywhere copy older documents all the time so as to maintain their knowledge for future generations. Notwithstanding the clarity of the text on the inventory stele, which stated that the Sphinx was already there when Khufu built the Great Pyramid, some insist Khafre was the builder of the Sphinx, which is based on two highly questionable premises. 1. A stele that was attributed to the pharaoh Thutmosis IV, 1413 to 1405 BCE, which was placed between the paws of the Sphinx. It is a long text, and some claim that the name of Khafre, Chephren, appears on it, even though the text surrounding said name was illegible. It is basically a desperate attempt to place the name of Khafre at the site of the Sphinx. 2. There is a causeway between the Pyramid Temple of Khafre and the Valley Temple of approximately 1,650 feet, 500 metres long. Even though there are no inscriptions on the Sphinx or in this temple, Western academia asserted that the presence of the causeway is sufficient evidence of some kind of a connection with Khafre. 3. Later excavations found a number of statues in this temple which were claimed to resemble the head features of the Sphinx. However, when the facial profiles of the statues were superimposed on the Sphinx's face profile, there was no match whatsoever. Even if we concede to these false premises of a name on a stele or unrelated statues, or the presence of the causeway, at best, there will be a conclusion that Khafre may have been the last pharaoh to restore the Sphinx before Thutmose IV, more than 1,000 years after the time of Khafre. The physical evidence at the site of the Sphinx supports its antiquity of belonging to the zodiac age of Leo. The original site where the Sphinx is located was a gently sloping plain with an outcrop of harder rock. The main features of the Sphinx are comprised of different geological conditions as follows. 1. The head of the Sphinx was carved out of this outcrop of a hard strata which is resistant to the effects of the natural elements. 2. The body of the Sphinx was formed by quarrying away the stone from all around the soon-to-be body. The body of the Sphinx was made of a softer limestone strata, which in turn consists of alternate harder and softer layers. These alternate layers are visible on site as weathered corrugation, which is about 2 feet deep into the bedrock. 3. The base of the Sphinx, as well as the bottom of the original quarry site, are made of a harder limestone, which is resistant to the effects of the natural elements. Since the body of the Sphinx is located in a hollow, it takes less than 20 years to fill it and totally cover the body. With the exception of the last century or so, the Sphinx has been covered by sand since the time it was created, thousands of years ago. Therefore, the Sphinx was protected from weathering, exposure to wind, and sand. However, there is a 2 foot deep, smooth erosion on the wall of the excavated hollow around the body of the Sphinx, with identical erosion patterns on the body of the Sphinx. Obviously, both the rock face and the Sphinx were carved before this severe weathering took place. Many academicians have resigned themselves to the fact that the erosion to the body of the Sphinx was caused by water effects. The question becomes, what water caused this peculiar erosion pattern? That groundwater has caused such erosion must be dismissed, since it is estimated that the groundwater table was 30 feet, 9 metres lower in Khafre's time, 2520 to 2494 BCE, than its present level. In other words, it is impossible for groundwater to have caused the erosion of 2 foot deep channels into the body of the Sphinx and the walls of the quarry pit. As explained at the beginning of this chapter, over the course of thousands of years, the inundation of the Nile had gradually deposited additional silt onto the ground of the valley. Whenever the ground rises, so does the groundwater table. Therefore, The evidence is overwhelming against the groundwater theory as the cause of erosion at the Sphinx site. There is no other rational answer except that water erosion occurred at the end of the last ice age, circa 15,000 to 10,000 BCE. Geologists agree that Egypt was subject to severe flooding at the end of the last ice age. Another powerful piece of evidence regarding the antiquity of the Sphinx is the revelation of a recent drill hole in front of the ruined temple of the Sphinx, located in front of the Sphinx and closed to the public, which revealed the presence of red granite at a depth of 54 feet, 16.5 metres. Granite is not native to northern Egypt and could only have come from Aswan, over 1,000 miles to the south. The presence of granite at such a depth is additional proof of construction activities much earlier than 3000 BCE, when the ground elevation was 54 feet, 16.5 metres below our present times. In conclusion, the overwhelming physical and historical evidence, as detailed above, leads us to the rational conclusion that Khafre did not and could not have built the Sphinx, but he was one of many who restored it. Naturally, ancient Egyptian monuments needed to be restored every few decades and centuries. The evidence at the Sphinx of Giza shows it to be the ancient Egyptian mark of the zodiac age of Leo the Lion, circa 13,000 years ago. Various photographs in support of the text of this subchapter are to be found in the digital edition of this book, as published in PDF and ebook formats. Topic 4: The Egyptian Calendar. Now we turn our attention to finding the age of Egyptian antiquity by reviewing the ancient Egyptian calendar. The Egyptians' advanced knowledge in astronomy, as reflected in their most accurate calendar, was acknowledged by the great Strabo, 64 BCE to 25 CE, who wrote, "They, the Egyptian priests, revealed to the Greeks the secrets of the full year, whom the latter ignored, as with many other things." Egypt's ingenious and very accurate calendar was based on the observation and study of Sabt's, Sirius's, movements in the sky. The ancient Egyptian calendar is therefore called the Sothic calendar, i.e., of having to do with Sirius, Sabt, the dog star. The ancient Egyptians knew that the full year was slightly over 365 and a quarter days. The Earth takes 365.25636 days to complete one revolution around the Sun. It should be noted that the chronology of 3,000 years of ancient Egyptian history by modern Egyptologists was made possible only because the ancient Egyptians followed the accurate Sothic year of 365.25636 days. Additionally, it is the Egyptian calendar that made it possible for history students worldwide to estimate the dates of events in all other countries in the world, countries that never had a correct or any calendar. The practical ancient Egyptians used a calendar consisting of 12 months, each equal to 30 days. The adjustments needed to make a complete year, i.e. the difference between 365.25636 days and the 360, 30 times 12 days, were made as follows. 1. The difference of 5.25 days comes at the end of the Egyptian year by adding 5 days every year and an additional day every 4 years. The ancient Egyptian year currently begins, in 2007, on the 11th of September. The 5-6 extra days begin on the 6th of September. 2. The difference of 0.00636 of a day for each year requires adding another day every 157 and a quarter years, which the Egyptians continued to do until our present times. This is accomplished by adding an extra day every 157, 314, 471, and 629 year cycles. The above adjustments by the Egyptians can clearly be seen in the last 2,000 years when comparing the ancient Egyptian calendar with the Latin calendar, as explained below. After Julius Caesar visited Egypt in 48 BCE, he commissioned the astronomer Sosigenes from Alexandria to introduce a calendar into the Roman Empire. This resulted in the Julian calendar of 365 days a year and 366 days every leap year. The Roman Julian calendar was literally tailored to be fit for a king. The first day of the year was coronation day for the Egyptian king at the end of the annual rejuvenation jubilee. See Egyptian Mystics, Seekers of the Way by this same author for more information. However, the Latin calendar did not take into account that the year is a bit longer than 365 and a quarter days. The difference between 365.25 days and 365.25636 days from the time of the adoption of the Julian calendar to our present time is 13 days. Such a difference explains the 13-day variation in the annual observations of numerous Christian festivals between the Orthodox and non-Orthodox churches. The reason is that one group followed the accurate Egyptian calendar, while the other group followed the inaccurate Julian calendar. When the Latin calendar was adopted in 48 BCE, the first day of the Egyptian calendar was August the 29th. Now, it is September the 11th, a difference of 13 days, which was just explained. In order to find the beginning date of the ancient Egyptian calendar, in terms of the deficient Latin calendar, we must account for the difference of 0.00636 of a day for each year between August the 29th and June the 21st. June the 21st signifies the summer solstice, which marks the beginning of the ancient Egyptian calendar, which marks the beginning of the Sothic cycle. The Egyptian Sothic cycle began with the heliacal rising of Sabt, Sirius, on the horizon, together with the sun, and remained visible for a few moments until it faded with the advance of dawn. We firstly find the difference between August the 29th and June the 21st to be 69 days. By dividing 69 days by 0.00636, the result is 10,849 years. Thus, on August the 29th of the year 48 BCE, the Egyptian calendar was at least 10,897 BCE. 10,849 plus 48. Let us compare our Sothic calendrical calculations of 10,897 to the zodiac calculations. As stated earlier, the present zodiac cycle began in 10,948 BCE. The difference between 10,897 BCE and the beginning of the age of Leo, 10,948 BCE, is 51 years. In other words, in 48 BCE, the ancient Egyptian calendar was a third of the way through the cycle of a 157-year period. The year 10,948 BCE, being the beginning of the age of Leo, is consistent with the statements of all early Greek and Roman writers, such as Plato, whose collected dialogues indicate that the ancient Egyptian canon of proportion for arts and architecture did not change over the previous 10,000 years before Plato's time, 428 to 347 BCE. Plato stated that the pictures and statues made 10,000 years ago are in no one particular better or worse than what they now make. Since the Islamic Arab occupation of Egypt in 641 CE, the ancient Egyptian calendar became known as the Coptic calendar, even though it was developed thousands of years before Christianity. Modern-day Egyptians still follow the ancient Egyptian calendar for practically all the countless annual festivals, agriculture, weather, and other matters, with just a handful of exceptions. It is by far the most practical and accurate calendar in use in the world.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt from the book Ancient Egyptian Culture Revealed, second edition, as authored by Mustafa Gadallah.